Wonderful. We're going to kind of get things rolling again because I have four extremely important women that I need to get out of here. They had their lunch and with us and have been very excited since I invited them 6 weeks, 2 months ago to do this. And can't tell you how much it means. Every single one of them responded immediately, yes. And thank you for inviting me. So, I will first let... I had a Welcome to Iowa video. The audio is not doing what we needed to do. With your permission, we are one of the first conferences that the Hotel Savory has had since they were remodeled and since people have started traveling again. So, I don't know what the food bar is with the video audio. I can show you the video later. I don't blame the hotel. I'll let them know. We'll figure it out. I'm not worried about it. So anyway, I'd like to introduce the chairman of the IRIS Board of Directors, Mr. Robert Gavora, brand new daddy, 2 weeks in. If I accidentally put up a photo of his newborn on the giant screen behind him, I know you'll forgive me. But like I told you, how shit my board was before, and how fantastic my board is now. I think you'll be able to see it in person going forward. But here is Rob Gavora, IRIS Board Chair.
Thank you so much, Mary Frances. Oh, you guys don't have to clap. I appreciate it. You clap the baby, now that's cool. Anyway, welcome to Des Moines, everyone. It is so amazing to be here. As Mary Frances said, my name is Rob Gavora. I've been with IRIS for about, how many years, Mary Frances? 5 years? 4 years?
Yes.
Something like that-ish. This is my first year as our board chair. I was our treasurer for a few years prior, so can greatly appreciate kind of the financial state of all your guys' organizations and some of the great stuff. Hopefully we will learn from our speakers today about the future and fundraising and some of that fun stuff. Just a real quick kind of tidbit about me and my background. I work here at Mercy One Des Moines Medical Center with our Children's Hospital. So I have a real appreciation, of course, for healthcare in general, but also for our listeners and your listeners across the country. When I first heard about IRIS from a colleague, I was kind of floored at. We have, I think, about 11,000, we think, about or so listeners across the state. And just the great service we provide to our communities, to Iowans, to your folks across the country, and couldn't really wait to get involved. So here I am, kind of 5 years later in front of you all today. We could not be more excited to have you guys here in Des Moines. I think have some great activities planned this weekend for you to kind of see our Capitol building and some of the downtown areas. I know we're having a reception, I think, later today at our offices as well. So I know Mary Frances has been doing a lot of kind of scrubbing and cleaning, so hopefully the place looks spick and span. So,
one quick thing.
Yeah.
I really apologize. I had COVID, and I am not right in the head. Rob welcomed you, and then he's going to welcome you again when he introduces Shannon. But first, Rob is going to introduce Polk County Supervisor Angela Connolly, because I screwed up the order of things. So,
okay.
Rob, Polk County Supervisor Angela Connolly is here to welcome us to Des Moines like you just did.
Okay. Thank you. Without further ado, Angela Connolly, everybody.
You know, this is the kind of crap I got to put up with. She wonders why sometimes I might have to say no when she asks questions. So, which I never do, mind you. But I'm happy that you guys are all here for the first time since COVID, too. You're all together. So let's give yourself a big round of applause. I hate to even say that word, COVID, anymore. But so stay safe while you're here. I'm glad you're in our great city and our community. I can't say enough great things about IRIS. I'm in love with IRIS and everything they do. Over 11,000 disabled people they help. What they bring to the whole state of Iowa. And just a quick story. During COVID, I don't know how she did it. Well, yeah, I do know how she did it. She did it out of her house. She begged, borrowed, and stealed people to do whatever they had to do to continue to make sure that people could hear their voices. And her voice, to read the paper, to listen to our senior centers, because we had to close our centers. And she's a big part of that. So people need to know what happens in our community. And when they don't see, they get to hear for all the volunteers and the great people like you in the audience today. And by the way, I want to say that I don't really want to tell you my age, that you don't know, but I do have a lot of gray and white hair. I have a very colorful shirt on. I'm not sure why it's so colorful today. I have gray pants on and black sandals. Kind of boring today. I tried to dress up for Mary Frances, but I didn't do
very well.
Do you
have pockets?
I don't have pockets. No pockets. And usually I do have pockets. I'm not sure why I don't have any pockets today. So again, you know, as a local government, we bring a lot of services to our residents, and this is just a great service that we can, one of the great services that we can bring to our residents. So thank you, Mary Frances, for everything that you do for our community, and get all your volunteers. You know I love you. And she's my neighbor, too, by the way.
Almost ran into your house during an ice storm one time.
She did.
I also have to point out, during the darkest days of COVID, do you remember when vaccination information was changing constantly? And do you remember how the very people that we serve each day were in the bullseye of that sucker in those early days? And when vaccinations were just coming out, and like the only people who could get them, you had to be 65 and have an L in your name. But do you remember how crazy that was and how we were all trying to sign up? Angela and I did a number of Zooms. And whenever something was set up by Polk County, like there was a phone bank, because how many of our listeners don't have the internet?
Call center.
Bunch. She set up a call center, so people could call one number and they would walk through and get vaccination appointments for people. This is life and death shit. And Polk County, whenever something big happened, this woman would call me and we'd quick Zoom and we'd get the information out fast. And we'd get the information out fast the next time it changed. And then when it changed again, we'd get it out fast. Our partnership with Polk County, I believe, saved some lives of people who wouldn't have known even how to begin getting a vaccination and didn't have the internet. And I just want to say thank you for making us a tool for what you do. So,
thank you. Okay, now I'd like to introduce three women, but apparently one of them can't be here today, and who is our House of Representative, Jennifer Converse. She is serving her first term in the House of Representatives, but she's ill today, so we wish her a speedy recovery. But two other women that I'd like to say just a few quick words. One is also my neighbor. That's funny. I live in a great neighborhood. Who doesn't have an Iowa State Senator living in their neighborhood? Senator Janet Peterson, who is serving her third term in the Iowa Senate. Woo. So Janet, if you want to come up and say a few words.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for being at my table. We had such a great conversation, and thank you for dipping your toe in the water to gather again, and for choosing Des Moines. Mary Frances, we're so happy to have all of you here. Yes, it's kind of emotional gathering together with groups of people in a room to look at what you've been able to do during a pandemic, and also what you're going to be able to do as you step forward in the next phase of all of this. I really truly believe that connecting with one another and connecting with others is the best gift that you can give, especially now. We have experienced some very dark times, just even in the past week or two, but over the past couple of years, and helping people feel like they are a part of something and that we all belong together is such important, vital work, and we are so grateful for what you do here in Iowa and the chance that you have to gather together to learn from each other and grow from each other. And I hope that you experience the magic of Iowa. All of us, this is our hometown, and I think we're all biased, but we think Des Moines is pretty fantastic. And Mary Frances knows how to get a hold of us. So today we talked about someone who was wanting to look for vinyl while they were here. We can recommend a great record store. No matter what you want to do while you're in Des Moines, I hope that you get a chance to experience our community and the beautiful things that Des Moines has done. I think Iowa is a state built on connections. And you know, this is a state where great campaigns start. This is where we have started to elect the President of the United States for over the past 50 years. And we value people being able to come together, and we also value what small groups of people can do to lead to really big things. And no doubt the things that are going to go on in this room over the course of your time together are going to be very impactful across the country. So we're so happy to have you here, and I hope that you love Des Moines, love Iowa, and come back. Thanks. Thank you.
Next, I want to introduce who's not my neighbor, because she comes from the east side. She's very proud of it, I might add. But I've known her a very long time, and this is City Councilwoman of Des Moines, so she's really happy you're here, Connie Bozen.
Yeah, we are very happy to have you in Des Moines, not in one of the suburbs. There isn't any rivalry at all, but again, I first heard about Mary Frances and the Iris group, I think through Angela, and I was amazed. I mean, there's so many people that we need to inform on the work that you do in all of your communities, and it's really what I call God's work to get people connected and keep people informed in what she does each and every day. And I know in many cases it's challenging budgets, and it's trying to get the word out and trying to expand and all the daily things you have to, hurdles you have to go through. So I only can applaud you and the dedication and the work that you do for people that deserve to have an opportunity. We in Des Moines are very proud of what's been going on. We've kind of had a renaissance downtown. So we hope you take part. I think you have a few days. I think you've already been out and about in some of the restaurants. If you'd been here about 25 years ago, it'd be a whole different story. So it's come a long way. And again, we just appreciate you being here. We appreciate Mary Frances and her leadership for the Iris in Iowa. And again, have a great time in Des Moines.
Thanks, Connie. Just I know you've got plenty to do this afternoon and the rest of this evening, so I want you to enjoy the rest of your time. Collaborate. We always have room to learn more each and every day on what we can do and what we can make, what things can be better. I know you're going to hear from one of my favorite people, Shannon Cofield, here soon. So thank you, everybody, for coming to Des Moines, and enjoy and be safe.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you, Angela. Are we clean? Are we going to get the COVIDs? Okay.
So one of my board members said, oh, my God, you're inviting four Democratic women.
Yeah.
Right? Well, every single one of these, like Janet is my senator in my district. Angela is my supervisor. Connie is my friend. I live just outside the city limits, so I can't vote for her, but I've stuffed your bags, girl. I've stuffed your bags and walked your... and Jennifer Kahn first. Every single one of these women, not only are they Democratic women, I said, that's not what they have in common. What they have in common is every single one of these women has been behind an Iris microphone. So they're not just talking. They're not just here going, welcome, I don't know anything about your organization. They've actually done the time and will be back. To do more. So I just want to thank them for giving their time today. And also, when you build the relationships, when you talk to someone like Connie Bozen, she'll say something like, you know what, there might be some city money for that. Mm-hmm. When you make a relationship with Janet, like I said, Iris gets like a tiny $4 a month or something when we get the state budget. But
it's not her fault.
But I know. If Janet were in the majority, we'd be funded a little more. But Janet knows when the budget comes across, Janet sees Iris and Janet protects my $4. So it's not about the money, but the money somehow comes. And I am not abashed to tell you that because of Angela, Polk County is one of our biggest funders. And also every event that we do, Polk County is the first one in. So the relationships you build with the people you vote for, don't be scared. Just do it. And then they end up being weird friends who will show up at your funeral, too. So, yeah. Thanks, you guys. And I'll Rob, I'm so sorry. And here you go.
Thank you, Mary Frances. Real quickly before I introduce Shannon, I love how Angela, you described your outfit to everybody. So real quickly, I'm wearing Clark dress shoes. They're kind of a white grayish color. They honestly kind of look like moccasins, if I'm being totally honest. Black pants, a black jacket, and a purple shirt that's checkered. And fun quick fact on this jacket, I actually bought this jacket at a Target in Houston, Texas. I was down there for a wedding and packed my own jacket, and when I landed and unpacked it, it honestly kind of looked like a piece of origami. It was very cool. So I had to make a quick emergency stop to get something not super folded. So anyway, without further ado, so Shannon Cofield, I've known Shannon for probably about 6 years or so, maybe 5-6 years. She is the former president and CEO of the United Way of Central Iowa, the chief of staff at Drake University, and is now currently the president of our foundation, Mercy One Des Moines. Just quick background, Shannon and I had a couple of meetings around Iris and with Mary Frances about kind of our fundraising and development strategy, and I think just so much untapped potential we have, I'm sure you all have within your organizations, and I know Shannon has some great content to share with you all about the future and how we're going to keep going. So, Shannon, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, Rob, and Mary Frances is not in the room, correct? Okay, so I've met Mary Frances twice, and she reaches out and wants me and asks me to be, which I was delighted because I've just a little bit of exposure I've had to Iris. I'm so impressed. But I was like, okay, but what do you want me to talk about? She was like, get them fired up, you know, get them fired up. So that's my charge today, but I'm not exactly sure if my presentation accomplishes that. So if it doesn't, that's just totally fine. And we're just going to talk about sort of really what I put together, my impressions. For those in the room, I'll go ahead and describe. I'm blonde hair, and I have on a bright colored dress, blue background with multicolored flowers on it. And I am just so delighted to be here. So what I thought I would share, and just maybe hopefully we can have a discussion about, is what, you know, I really have had a very minor exposure to Iris. And so what were my initial impressions? I spent my entire career in nonprofit, in fundraising. I understand many of you probably come from sort of smaller shops, one or one or two or three or four people, but likely no more than that. And so how do you sort of make the best of what you do? And again, these are just some of my thoughts about that, and we will, and I'm also going to share some personal stories and some personal things that I have found and information, so I'm going to work my PowerPoint. First thing I want to do is just say thank you. Thank you for what you do every day. Thank you for making a difference in people's lives. It was one of the first things that really impressed me when I sat down with Rob and Mary Frances and a couple of board members. I mean, just again, hearing today here in Iowa, 11,000 people who are impacted by the services is incredible. So I know, again, having worked in nonprofit a long time, not everyone says, you know, thank you for your work. And I just want to say on behalf of those people, thank you for all that you do. A little bit about me. I know Rob just gave a little bit of my professional world. As I said, I've spent most of it in nonprofit. I spend a lot of it at events in the community. I have a staff of about 10. We raise about $10 million a year for the Mercy One Medical Center, which is one of the two large health systems here in Iowa. I'm married. I have two daughters, grown. One on the left is Rachel. We like to do a lot of hiking. One on the right is Anna. She lives in Spain. I just got back from Spain. She fell in love with a Spaniard about 4 years ago while she was studying abroad. And now she lives over there. Those are my two new daughters. My daughters in the middle, that's Piper and Pumpkin Pie, my husband and I call her. And then I'm a Kansas City Chiefs huge fan, and particularly Mahomes in particular. I probably could qualify as a possible stalker. I follow him, his wife, his mom, his dad, his brother, her mom, all on social media. They're having another baby. Yep, they're having another baby. He just played yesterday in a golf tournament in Las Vegas. He and Josh Allen with the Buffalo Bills against Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, and they lost like by one stroke. I love to read. Actually, I'm in a book club with Rob, and so we read. I like to read for fun. I used to like to read business books all the time, but I don't do that anymore. I try not to. And this is like my latest. I'm just getting to let them know me a little bit, Mary Frances, beyond just.
They should.
This is like my big thing. I decided a few years ago I wanted to learn to knit. And I just knitted this blanket and took it to my daughter over in Maine a couple of weeks ago. So that was like, that took me like 3 months to do, and that's like another thing that I enjoy. So just FYI. So Rob alluded a little bit to how did I get involved and get connected, and it was this exact email from Rob. And that reached out to me and said, hey, we would like and appreciate your thoughts about how can we better, you know, generate resources for IRIS. I think I was just vaguely aware of IRIS, but I didn't know a lot, and I knew Rob was on the board, and so I said, yeah, that would be fantastic. And
can
I'll
tell you. Can you read it for?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Yes, thank you, Shannon. Thank you for accepting my meeting request to go over the Iowa Radio Reading Service headquarters, about 5 minutes drive from Mercy One headquarters. In a few weeks on October 20th. As I shared in my previous email, our organization is hoping to pick your brain and review our fundraising thoughts and strategy. Namely, we are in the process of developing an RFP for a firm to come in and help us with our fundraising strategy efforts, and would like to hear your thoughts on organizations in Central Iowa that we could potentially partner with, and conversely, those organizations we should stay away from, which is actually just as important, because you can waste a lot of money if you're not working with sort of reputable and the right people. Let me know if you have any questions, Rob. So I would be happy to do that. So went over, met Mary Frances and a couple of other board members. I was so impressed. I got a tour of the office. I saw the what do you call it, the radio booth? Just got a full download. I think probably spent a good two and a half hours there that afternoon. And after I learned and listened to a lot of information, I was a little bit on overload. I walked away with some of my takeaways. And first of all, the scale and scope of the reading service in Iowa, and I'm probably not saying this exactly correctly, so I apologize, but I was so impressed. Again, I had no idea. And not only that, like even in our own medical center where reading services took place, I didn't know that that was IRIS. Like, I did not know that. So it was such an enlightening moment for me. And the second thing that really struck me was that so much impact, there's so much impact on lives, and that story needs to be told. And how can it better be told? And we really haven't gotten even back to that part of our conversation yet, but it's, if you're gonna raise money, and if you're, that's such an important part of being able to tell your story so that it has and touches people and has an impact so that others are invited to support your mission. My assessment based on just what they shared that day was that fundraising was not going to be the lowest hanging fruit in terms of generating revenue. That there was, it reminded me, the model that was described to me reminded me of sort of a social innovation mission. Think of what came to mind that day. For instance, the YMCA. The YMCA charges a fee for membership, and that's just, you know, that's one of the things that they provide. Or Goodwill. They take donations in. They, in doing so, they help employ people, many times people with disabilities, and then they turn around and are able to generate as a source of revenue for their organization, while also doing other types of fundraising, writing grants, and so forth. So what struck me was fundraising, you can do that, but that's not the lowest hanging fruit. I asked, and Mary Frances, jump in there if I am not telling the story quite the right way. But I was like, well, do you charge for your services? And, well, no. And I'm like, and so, like, even at Mercy One, we don't pay for that? No. Well, we should be. You know, I was like, well, we should be doing that. And so we talked about just, obviously there are individuals that may or may not support your mission. I think probably many of them do just voluntarily write a check. And that's not what I was talking about as much as I was thinking about, again, those organizations. You do the audio description for live performances and things like that. You're providing a service. They're paying other vendors to provide services while you're there. I'm asking the question, why would you not consider charging for that service? So that was, to me, like the moment that I felt like the best place to start and then be able to kind of generate some quick revenue while you work on a longer-term fundraising and partnership plan. So we've not really circled back on some of that, but that was sort of my aha. And then really leveraging, you know, I'm going to tell you a personal story here in a minute, but looking at what you have and what you don't have. It is so easy when we are in a scarce environment, and we, let's face it, we all are. Even though I work for a huge organization, I just have a meeting this morning about cutting staff because we, you know, our revenues are down, our volumes are down. I mean, it's just, it doesn't matter what size of the organization. Seems like you're always working from a scarcity, point of scarcity. So, but having said that, if we do a better job of taking stock of our assets and what we actually do have to build on that strength, and a little bit less on what we don't have and the deficits, it's amazing sort of what can actually happen. So as an example, I'm gonna share with you a personal story. And I'm actually gonna name the university because they're here in town, and I don't think I'm saying anything that wouldn't be okay to say. So Drake University is here. Rob mentioned I was chief of staff. I was actually, I think I had three titles in 3 years or 4 years, but chief of staff and senior counsel to the president for strategic partnerships. So I was hired to build relationships with the community. I'm putting that in air quotes, by the way. Build relationships with the community. It was a very nebulous, very vague goal. And I did not have any budget. I had no staff. I seriously lacked an understanding of the political landscape in a higher education environment, especially between faculty and administration. I had no idea what I was. I thought everybody was happy I was there. That was not the case. Not me, but the position, I should say. I was not a member of the president's council, so I had no perceived influence. So even though I sat in the president's office, I was not a member of the senior team. That was difficult. I lacked direction and clarity of role. I wasn't sure what was expected or how it would be measured. And last but not least, I felt periodically undermined. Again, the political sort of landscape of the university. I was hired by one president. He was soon to be leaving and going to retiring, and a new president would be coming in. And I figured if I didn't figure out pretty darn quick how to add value to the university, I wouldn't probably have a job when the new president came in. So this was in 2000. Came in November of 2012, and I got married in August of 2013. So I'd been there about 9 months by the time I got married, and I was pretty discouraged, I think, at that point. So I went on my honeymoon, and I literally, since you said a little word, Mary Frances, I'm gonna say another one. Okay. I literally kicked myself in the ass on my honeymoon. I laid on the beach, and I was like, you need to stop focusing on what you don't have, and you need to start thinking about what do you have. What do you have? Because you know what, Shannon, you're not gonna go get another job. You're not gonna, you know, this is it. This is what you signed up for, so figure it out. So I kind of made this, you know, okay, well, what do I have? And I thought, well, I have a lot of community relationships. I was the head of a nonprofit organization for a long time in the community. I need to make a list of all those people that I know. I had a fairly positive reputation, a track record. You know, to what extent could I leverage that? I had a few faculty that were working for me. I'm a big believer that if you can just get a few small wins, one or two will change and start to build some momentum. I had some trustee support. This was a position that the trustees wanted. And so those few board members that I knew, I felt like, how can I better engage them? I had some belief in my basic skill set. I know for myself, I'm strategic, focused, and I'm determined. So where was that going to take me? And all of that, by the way, they were intangible. All of those things that I was able to focus on that I felt like would make a difference, like I have to figure out how I'm going to use what I do have and stop looking at what I don't have. Because I was never going to get anywhere, and I kept spending and spending and spending. So then what happened? Well, the more time I spent thinking about how to leverage the other side of, you know, the right side, that negativity in my mind began to subside. I started being creative. I was able to better imagine possibilities. Those possibilities gave way to curiosity and questions. When I was able to sort of free myself from, I was able to sort of think about, well, okay, I don't have that, but that's not what I need to think about. What can I focus on? Those questions led to engagement, and then I was able to, I'm giving you like the super high level version of all this, but was able to recruit about a dozen high level, senior level human resource executives in the community. They served as an advisory board to me for about 18 months, and one of the things that they said they wanted out of a partnership with Drake University was to have a place where they could send their professionals for professional education, so they didn't have to send them and have the expense of sending them to, Duke or wherever, Harvard or whatever. So this group of executives spent about 18 months helping us understand what were the competencies they were wanting to train in their employees. What were the, and I didn't know, I did not have an HR background. I had no HR background. But I'm always like, well, I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out, and I'm going to find somebody that will help me ask the right questions. And so within about 18 months, we had hired, they were all willing to make an investment because they all needed this. This was a mutual goal within the community. So they were helping, they were willing to help fund the seed of this new program we were trying to put together. So, in addition to that, I worked with my job there was not to raise money, but I did work with the development office, and they had a donor they thought would be interested, and we were able to get like an endowment. The endowment had already been, the gift had already been given for an endowment, but it had not been designated as to what the purpose of those funds would be used for. So we were able to get the donor to say that she would support sort of this also seeding of this program. Anyway, 18 months later, we launched a program called Leading Others. It created $400,000 in revenue. The first year, we ran two programs. Each program had 20 people in it, and it's still going today. They only run it once a year, but they established a whole executive education program. I left, frankly, shortly after this got launched and came to Mercy One. But understand the only thing that changed was the way I was thinking about it. That's it. I wasn't actually given any resources until my mindset opened up into a different way. And I share that just, again, because we're all working in a resource-constrained environment. Also, the last thing I did do, and I didn't want to put this in my presentation because it was kind of, I just don't want to put it in writing. The other thing I did was I kind of made this grid. After I sort of did this, let me go back, oops. After I sort of made the what I did have, didn't have, what I did have, I made this like sort of grid. Yes.
Describe how it's two columns.
Okay, thank you, Mary Frances. I have two columns. On the left hand, I have what I did not have, and I think I shared some of those. So on the left hand side is I didn't have the budget and the staff. I did lack the understanding of the higher education. And I wasn't a member of the President's Council. All those things that I described, I did not have. And then on the right side, I focused on what I felt like I did have, and that was those, diverse community relationships, a reputation, faculty, trustee support. So that's sort of a T. I guess you would describe that as a T. those were sort of the things that I found to sort of get me moving in the right direction. Then think of a cross, okay, that has four quadrants. And I didn't put this up there, but that was the next thing I did. And I kind of went through everybody that I worked with sort of in my mind, and I used these four. You can use whatever you want. I just found it super helpful to start getting focused because I didn't know a lot of people. They were all new relationships. But one quadrant was who do I like and who do I trust? Who do I like and who do I not trust? Who do I trust but I don't like? And who do I not like and who do I not trust?
That's called the Johari window.
Oh, it is? Oh, I didn't even know that. I did it all on my own.
The Johari window. Johari
window. Okay, well, that's good to know. Wow. Well, so I decided, because I was like 50 by then, and I didn't really want to work with people that I didn't like either. That was the other thing I just didn't want to, like, do. So I really wanted to try to focus on who did I like and who did I trust that I felt like I could sort of be vulnerable with. I could say, you know, I don't know exactly what I'm doing, but I need your help. And I started with that group of people to kind of get going. And that was super, super helpful. And then, you know, I had names in different quadrants of, you know, whomever. Some people I never did really even want to work with or even speak to, but, you know. So any questions before I'm really almost ready to wrap up this part and have some discussions, but are there any questions just about this personal example I gave you or anything that I've said so far you would like more information on? No? Okay.
Did you share it with anyone or this was just for your personal self-discovery?
It was for my personal leadership need because I felt stuck. I felt a little stuck. I felt a little confused. I felt there was a lack of clarity about what was expected of me, and I was focused on the lack of resources that I had. So I did it for my own personal. I did share with my husband, I guess, probably. Nobody other than that. Yes.
Well, if you recall that first email that you received, my board was all, we need to hire fundraisers. Well, we need. To hire a fundraiser, you know, now we have scarce resources. I'm like, with what? With good intentions? What are we going to pay them exactly? And my board came to you with one idea of everything, and it wasn't until you kind of did this grid thing, and I'm a visual thinker. I do much better when I make lists and little boxes like the Eisenhower method and all that stuff. But it changed me completely. Just by looking at it in a different way. And I think is that kind of how when you sat down and kind of cracked it out, you could see more clearly what you needed to do.
Yeah. And I think, again, we've all been impacted by COVID. We all have to reimagine our work differently. It truly is an opportunity. And so what has to change? Because you're not going to be able to go back to doing business as usual because business isn't usual as it once was. So what do we all need to do differently to change and to grow? So I'm just sharing like some things that had helped me, and then I think you have a huge, huge opportunity to take advantage of your value that you are giving away. And play many of you, I'm assuming, I don't know. I asked Mary Frances, like, is this normal? And she said, I think generally across the board, maybe not exclusively. So thinking about what do you offer that you give away, it's not bad to charge a fee for a service you provide because if they don't pay you, they're going to pay somebody else, generally speaking. Okay, this is my last slide. So the first quote is just do something. So when I first came to Des Moines in 2004, I was 39 years old. I'll be 58 tomorrow. And I had never been a CEO, but I was leading this big nonprofit organization, United Way. And one of the first things I did was I went out and visited with donors in the community. And one of them is just doesn't mince words. He has a reputation of, and he just looked across the table at me. He said, just do something. You know, don't sit and analyze things to death. Don't, like, do something. And so that always stuck with me. Like, so we which then leads me to the next thing. Like, we all wait for it to be perfect before we do something. And you've heard that saying, don't let perfection be the enemy of the good. So that something does not have to be perfect. It can be perfect-ish. And I love when Rob was introducing himself, and he said he'd been here, I don't know, he said, what did he say, 4 or 5 years-ish. Well, I brought this little book, and I highly recommend if you like children's books, which I like because they're very simple, and they usually have a very powerful lesson, and this one is for 5 to 8-year-olds. I won't read it, even though it's a really short book, but I will tell you the synopsis of it, and if you choose to get that, by all means, it's like $12 or $10 or something like that on Amazon. But the story is of this little boy named Ramon, and he loves to draw, and he loves to, he just loves to draw. And his brother walked in on him one day while he was drawing something and laughed at him and made fun of him. And Ramon just was really upset, crumpled up all of his papers, cried, kept trying, kept drawing, and every time he would draw something else, he'd crumple it up. And little did he know that his sister was picking up his pieces of paper that he was crumpling up and taking them into her room and pinning them up around her room because she loved what he was drawing. And he finally realized that she was doing that. He was saying to her, I'm so mad because I wanted to draw a vase. And she says, well, she takes him to the wall and she was like, it's vase-ish. And he says, well, you're right, it is vase-ish. And all the things that he had drawn, she takes him around to say, well, it's dog-ish. It unleashed a lot of freedom in Ramon to continue to draw and follow his passion because he lived ish happily ever after. And I think if we can all live in that world of ish, you can get to where you think you can go or want to go if you just don't let perfection be the enemy of the good. And you also realize that, you have value. And I found this quote, which I thought was perfect. Everyone isn't going to embrace your value, but that doesn't mean you need to change your, you need to go and change your price. So with that, I will say thank you. And yes?
Would you describe the picture? I think it's so cute.
Oh, well, I'll pass this book around. This is him. This is the character of the story. And he's drawing, and His hair is blackish brown, curly.
Let me show you something.
Thank you.
You'll be on my audio description team. We just haven't trained you yet.
Yes, I have not been trained.
I'd like to hand this thank you. Megan from St. Louis is one of the best audio describers
thank
out
you.
There.
Oh, geez, thank
and her
you.
Microphone.
Yeah,
here.
Thank you.
The cover.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This is, yes, I need training.
Okay, go girl, see how we got. So this is a hardcover book, and the title is Ish by Peter E. Chernow.
My closer.
Sorry, I also have a big duckbill mask, so that's probably not helpful. And it's a line drawing of Ramon, a little boy with light brown skin and dark curly hair. And he's mid-run, his feet are outstretched. And in one hand, he's holding a paintbrush with ink, black ink on a paintbrush. And the paintbrush has just painted the word ish in cursive, and the dot of the eye looks like a little sun. It has a yellow sun with little, or it might be flower, actually. My bad, I haven't read the book, but so there's probably a flower on top, I guess, with a yellow center and pink petals. And Ramon, his clothes are, he's wearing, it looks like watercolor to me, so he's wearing some green pants and a yellow shirt with a kind of a pink sweater over the top, and it's flapping out behind him because he's running.
Beautiful.
Wow.
Thank you.
Wow.
And that's why you got the National Award last year, I think.
Yeah, and yeah. Thank you. Question. And it doesn't have to be after this. Fundraising, partnerships, anything you want to talk about, I'm happy to. Yes.
Let's do the.
And say who you are. You don't have to say what you look like anymore.
Although I change clothes.
Okay.
I'm no longer wearing clothes.
We're to use one mic.
Okay.
Shouldn't have said anything.
Is there a charger for that one?
Okay, yeah, I'm Yvonne Mastromano, again from Virginia Voice. My question is that you've said many times, and this is, if my teamwork was here, they would all say, oh my gosh, she talks about this every day, monetizing. How do we monetize something? And, you know, our services are free, and as long as I'm there, that will never change. They should be free. But if we're going to charge for something, whom do we charge?
So again, I know one model, so I don't know if all models are like this, but as so for instance, I'll go back to Mary Frances, maybe you can describe a little bit, for instance, just my own organization at a hospital, the extent of service that IRIS provides to patients in our hospital.
Very simply, we're on one of the channels at the hospital. We've been on there for probably 20 years. Used to be we actually put an actual compole radio and a plexiglass box up on the helipad and dropped an audio signal down. So we're on one of the TV channels, channel 3.
But that's not part of the MediaCom.
What's your question?
Well, so they access it, but it's not part of like a package we pay MediaCom.
Right. They pay for MediaCom TV, but our signal is injected into their TV system at no cost. Is that the right answer?
So we're paying, I don't know what we pay MediaCom to have a television in, I don't know, 600 hospital rooms. Why are we not paying IRIS something to provide the service that they are providing? That's my question. You know, we're paying a vendor for entertainment, but this is a different type of service. And in some ways, entertainment, if they're listening to a book or a magazine or something, right? Am I right in thinking?
Agreed.
Yeah. So that would be who. So if you're providing the audio
description
services for the Civic Center while a play is, they should be paying for your service to provide that for their patrons.
Yes.
I mean, for their customers. Yes.
How do you make the switch? We're in a lot of hospitals that aren't paying. They're making $1 gazillion a year.
Well, they're not. That's
well, yeah. How do you make the switch since they've been there for so long and they haven't been paying? How do you suddenly say, by the way, we want you to pay something now,
yeah,
without them saying, well, in that case, we don't want your service anymore?
It's all about value. So first of all, I think any hospital would be very hard-pressed and wouldn't... I mean, they know what you provide to their patients is invaluable, quite honestly. I think the first thing you want to do is scale, you know, how many patients, hours. I mean, as much as you can quantify, I guess, is the best thing to do. And also, what costs do you have associated with that, right? You have costs associated, and they're getting it for free. At the very least, it's fair to be asking for your cost to be, you know, some portion of your cost to be reimbursed to some extent. You can go for it, and Mary Frances and I have talked about this. There are a couple ways to talk to an organization about. One way in that situation that might work best first is to just go in and ask for sponsorship. To say, you know what, we have been service here for 25 years. It costs this much money. We have continued costs. We'd like to ask you to support us with a contribution or with a sponsorship. I think many, if we haven't done it yet because we've just, but I mean, I'm going to be a huge advocate when that does happen for Mercy One because, again, if Iris were to say, and if you don't, we're going to pull out, which she would never do, but I'm telling you, our hospital understands how important that service is to our patients and families. So giving you that sort of how do you do it, I think each case is a little bit different, but starting with providing some data and getting to the right person is also really helpful. Getting a champion inside, so if you have these relationships, who do you know inside who can also help shepherd through making, you know, helping you figure that out? Because like now,
I'm an advocate, so when we get ready to make that conversation, then I'm going to
be right there with me. Yeah.
Well, when we started our conversation, and I've watched everybody for years who serves hospitals and residential facilities and any place that's a multi-bed place, we've asked for years, how do you count? A lot of people count by actual beds that the hospital reports, you know. A lot of people count, University of Iowa, we're on their system there. Up in Iowa City, it's a giant teaching hospital, and they have 17,000 televisions. Not 17,000 beds, but they have 17,000 televisions, some in the waiting room and in the, you know, all the stuff. So anyway, that's how they defined how many at the University of Iowa. I did not feel comfortable using 17,000 televisions, so I cut that number way down. I took the number of beds, and then I might have, but anyway, it's fuzzy math. And we've talked a lot about that, and Amy's going to help us. We're going to talk about, we don't have a solid way to count or quantify our impact. Now, another thing, to just be totally honest with my relationship with Shannon, that's just like 4 days old, but so we go to Shannon. She hears about us. She's fired up about us. She's like, first question I have for you is, why aren't we paying you? This is stupid. So we start working on that, and then our cable provider statewide is called MediaCom, and we are not on MediaCom. And I tried to get on MediaCom, but she stopped answering my emails like 10 years ago. And then I ran into her at a Chamber of Commerce breakfast, and at first she saw me and scooched way away from the melon really fast. And then after the thing was over, she's like, how are you? I'm like, I'm fine. And, you know, I was gracious and everything. Then I got an email a day or two later and said, Mary Frances, your name has been on my whiteboard for 10 years. You've been haunting me. I feel bad about myself because I never got back to you. And now I just need to wipe my soul clean. So you want to have a cup of coffee? I'm like, yes. We start the conversation again. The conversation now to put Iris on the MediaCom signal across the state of Iowa is much easier technically than it was 10 years ago when we started. So she brought in engineers. We started a conversation, but then I called Shannon. And I said, I got to be honest. You were going to help me arrive at a price to go at your organization, your funders, to pay Iris to be on your TV. Well, now, if we're on MediaCom, you'd be getting it for free anyway on MediaCom. So I need to be honest about what the situation is. And I think Shannon appreciated the honesty because it... I think in the time I've known her, I can see how her brain keeps going even after she's asleep. You know, she's just like organizing things and stuff. I wanted her to know kind of where this process was with MediaCom. But I also know enough about her to know that, okay, maybe we can't pay you directly to put you on one of our channels, but if MediaCom's carrying you, I bet we can figure out some other twisted way to give you $3 or something. But we got to figure out, as an industry, we need to decide what we're counting when it comes to facilities, hospitals, and, you know, apartment stuff.
Yeah.
Because we can't ask for it if we don't know how many of it is. So,
yeah. Yeah, and it's, yeah.
The value, you know, when I led United Way, there was always this conversation about what's your overhead? And in any organization, I mean, and it's a fair question. But you can have a 5% overhead and not add a lot of value to your mission because you're just barely, or you can have a 10 or 15% overhead and actually be accomplishing some real impact. And so, yes, it might be a greater overhead that's not going to that mission, but without the overhead, you don't have the mission. And so it's about articulating the value, that's, you know, back to the value of that overhead or the value of that price, and it's, sometimes it's not something that you can, you just kind of have to do an educated guess as to what, and that's why having an advocate on the inside of an organization working with you would be helpful, about, well, how much sponsorship do you think we get, or how much do you think they would pay? I mean, again, back to when we had the first conversation about, we should be paying you like we do MediaCom or any other vendor that's providing a monthly service. I don't know what that number is, but it should be something. Is it 500,000? No. But is it $5? No. Where is it, and how do we figure that out? And, you know, we haven't gotten there yet, but there, it's figure outable. It just, I couldn't give you the process right now about how to do that. But it should be paid for.
Can I interrupt you again?
Yes.
The other thing about serving mercy, I mean, again, and Shannon exploded my brain about how much more valuable we are than just pumping a signal through. Patient education, having information about your service available upon admission. In Iowa City, when a patient leaves, there's a little blurb in there about, well, first of all, in their admission packet is a little blurb about IRIS, and then there's also information on if you would like an IRIS radio when you're discharged, or if you would like to access the IRIS signal, if this has been helpful to you. We don't require doctor signature. I figure if you want to listen to old people reading stuff badly, I'm not going to stop you. So there's an application number right there. But also, audio description of the building. University of Iowa, they have, hospitals are confusing.
Yes.
Methodist, I mean.
Mercedes.
I can see the signs, and I can walk from place to place, and I get lost. Doing some hospital education, going in and talking to the right people, and teaching them how to just think about people with visual impairments. Think of how navigation feels when someone can't see, or, God forbid, not see and be in a wheelchair at the same time. That's valuable. They will pay you to come in and train staff, or more than anything, raise awareness about this with staff. Your knowledge in this field is something you didn't even know you had.
Yeah.
And now you kind of can put it together, and we can share with each other as services kind of different training materials. I've stolen so much stuff from you people. It's not even funny. But you have value that you can go out and sell. And you'll meet Liz Cooney tomorrow. She's doing the You Have What You Need. But she works at Taro International, which is corporate training. In exchange for her coming and talking to you, I'm going to go talk to the trainers that train the trainers about how to think about accessibility and how to think about when you're somewhere doing a PowerPoint.
Yeah.
What'd you learn today, Shannon?
How I need to describe.
Yeah.
I can't assume everybody can see the PowerPoint.
You're not going to forget that now, are you?
I will not. No.
So anyway, before you even leave this room and this presentation, you already have something of value that you can put a freaking price tag on and shine it up a little bit, and you can sell this to organizations that aren't just about old people or blind people or something. So
yeah.
You have a lot more value to hospitals than just the signal you're pumping.
And let me just, you said something, the word sell, and people, a lot of people are like, sell, or ask people for money. I'll tell you how I overcame my journey was to overcome being afraid to ask people for money or ask people for anything. So I realized in my profession that people care about the organization and the people we serve. Every organization I've worked for, whether it was United Way, Mercy One, I didn't have a fundraiser World of Trade, but you know, people actually, you know, care about the work you do and want to make a difference. They want to make a difference. I view myself as just the vehicle many times to help them and invite them to something they already care about and are passionate about. And if they say no, then that's okay. Like, we all know people who have died under very tragic circumstances for a variety every day. Literally, I don't think anyone has ever died from hearing the word no. But we think we might because it feels like such personal rejection. And once you hear it a couple times, you're like, well, next. You know, you move. It does hurt. I'm not going to lie. You know, the first few times somebody tells you, it's like, ugh. But you know what? You will eventually find people that are like, wow, thank you for inviting me to support this. It's such an opportunity. And when you find the right two or three people, then you become passionate about and can't wait to go make the next ask. I mean, I'm
truly. So when you talk about selling, it's not about you going out and like getting something from somebody. It is really giving them an opportunity to support something they already care about. Many times. Yes.
Yes.
Could you bring the microphone?
Okay, yeah.
This is Amy Villerman from Voice Corps in Columbus. Tell me about the value of content, you as a hospital official. If I come to you and tell you every day the patients in your hospital can hear their local newspaper, they can hear an hour of, we have Columbus Monthly magazine, perhaps you have the equivalent here, Des Moines Monthly, Iowa magazine, we have Ohio magazine. My point is, and this was made clear to me by a volunteer reader who had an elderly aunt, went to see her every day in the hospital, and she was just struck by how there were just, you know, loud television commercials that came on too loud. And granted, the hospital televisions had some music stations or some pretty picture stations. But if your vision is failing, or if you have no vision, or if you just don't want that, but you still want to, you know, what's the value of that person laying in their bed? It's 2 a.m, there's nobody around, they're wide awake. You know, to turn on something and hear a local magazine, hear a book being narrated, the Smithsonian, whatever, Nat Geo, like I said, local papers. What's you as a hospital official, what would you say to me? I like that. Is that valued? Is that a value to you? How can I use that with the Ohio State University Medical Center?
Thank you for your question, and yes, and again, I'll say that's the other thing that blew me away the day that we met. At first, Mary Frances described, well, we read the newspaper, but then it was like 24 hours of content, and all, it was books, and it was magazines, and it was, and I was like, wow. So, yes, first of all, that's extremely valuable.
It's unique.
It's unique, but here's the other thing. You think of like concentric circles, and you know, especially in the rural communities, which I think many of you probably serve as well. Being able to, you know, we in the medical field are keenly aware of mental and emotional isolation, which has an impact on physical health. Very much so. So I think looking at it through that lens, when you're talking through to a health organization, it's not just the here and now, but it's also like the benefit, the ripple effect, if you will, of how it benefits patients and ultimately the community. Because more and more and more, I think hospitals are looking outside their four walls to say, oh my gosh, how do we keep people from ever walking through these doors? And if part of it is creating some level of companionship, that's what I'm gonna call it, I don't know if that's what you call it. Yeah, that is some level of companionship that keeps someone from feeling terribly lonely and depressed, and I mean, that's big. That's very big. So the content is important, but and I love that it was very much varied because it's going to be. I might, for instance, not be interested in listening to the newspaper, but I would listen. I don't know. But I think what I would write, like it, even if I'm in the hospital right now and I'm not visually impaired or blind, I might be interested in just being quiet and can I listen to a book or can I listen to, because I don't like TV going 24/7, but I listen to a book. Yeah. Any other questions or conversation?
Shannon, thank you.
My pleasure.
I mean, you got her. she's one of the biggest wigs in this town. So, which to me is impressive. I don't know big city people, I give it. She blew me away, obviously. You can tell that if I haven't counted that message home. It made me think about what we do differently. The part about isolation. If you don't
figure out a way to work that into your med if you haven't already. Worked social isolation and its health impacts into your messaging and into what you do already. Today's a good day to start. Along that line, I'll also say, you know, I copied Amy's phone-a-friend program during the pandemic, where our volunteers who could not come in and read anymore, we had them phone our listeners who were isolated, uber isolated, and it turned into some wonderful friendships. But check on your volunteers. This is an aside. Check on your volunteers too. They're reading some pretty horrible things these days. So watch. Give loving care to the people who make it possible, who not only make it possible for you to have a job and a signal, but also because they're probably people you care about. But my little watch, love your volunteers, PSA. I think you all know that, and also yourselves. But this mental health thing, it's not a trend, and I don't want to minimize it.
Right.
But, okay, blind people, we put ourselves in that silo.
Right.
So we're only going to market ourselves, or send our message to blindness organizations. Yeah. Well, elderly.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a silo. We're only going to do elderly people. Just think about, you have so many more silos than you think. So many more ways that you could get a University of Iowa. They're not allowed to get a sponsor for our signal there because they are a state university and there's state money or something. So we couldn't get a sponsor for that. You know what I can do? I can get a sponsor for the show.
Yeah.
And then I can air that on them, and they can't come get me on that one. But there are so many more ways to peel this onion. But you're never going to get those sponsorship dollars or that fundraising dollars unless you are the greatest advocate for how freaking cool is it what we do. And look what it does. Girl, I worked at a TV station for 26 years. I can't go to sleep without something, so I turn on C-SPAN, or I flip around until I find something that's just about right. I can't have any drama, but I need to go to sleep with something. So I know, you know, just think about the sponsors for that. A running shoe store could sponsor, you know, think about, go way outside where we've been, like a running shoe sponsor for getting good sleep. I don't know, but...
Well, bringing it back, how do you sell that to a hospital executive? Again, your example of getting into those televisions in the hospital.
Yeah.
What do they want to hear? You know, if we got 24 hours of broadcasting, most of it's local. Is that a selling point?
Is
the word at the hospital? Well, they
I would
pay,
say for the most part.
They pay Voice Corps $10,000 a year, so we can put it in. All rooms of the James
at Ohio State University?
One of their hospitals, yeah. Is that valuable?
$10,000.
Is that valuable to mercy?
Listen to what she's going to say. How much? $10,000 is a little bit.
It's
small. That's small, I know, yeah.
So when you're asking, like...
Go big?
No, I think... I mean, justify it to whatever, but I mean... Don't be afraid. $10,000 relative to how large an organization is extremely reasonable.
But on the hospital end, you know, the hard, you know, business headed, you know, like you said,
I'll tell you, and this is not a secret, but Senator Janet Peterson, who is the founder of a phenomenal nonprofit here in Des Moines called. That's the program. I think it's Healthy Birthday. It's the and she and several mothers lost their babies while they were still pregnant, or they were stillborn, as a result of, and anyway, they developed this app so that they mothers could count the kicks so that they would know if their child was in distress and get to the hospital and so forth.
Has anybody ever heard of Count the Kicks? Seen it in your doctor's office, a poster, anything like that?
So it's not a big organization. It has maybe two staff. They do phenomenal work. We have a physician that was very instrumental in working with these mothers. But they have, they do work year-round, but they do a one-time, they do a public event every year. Mercy One is a presenting sponsor, and I think it's a $30,000 sponsorship for one day. One day.
Now they
lunch.
Have,
is it a lunch?
It's a lunch.
Okay, so I'll ask for more.
But I'm just giving you some context. Like, you know, we have so many organizations that come and ask for funds. If it aligns with our mission and supports our patients, which this absolutely does, we're going to support it. Yeah.
And on your programming, Amy, you're going into them. Don't let them tell you what the programming should be.
Never.
You're going in as the expert of what the programming should be, and that, you know, according to all reading services everywhere, this is a solid 24 of good programming. I mean, don't try to slice and dice and say.
No, I'm very proud of what we do. I just want to know on their end, what do they want to hear from me to make that green light go on and say, yeah, this is what, you know.
I do like
I will tell you this. One of the big...
Give Voice for money, and this is how much we're going to give them. Let's make it happen.
I'll tell you one thing you can do. Hospitals, so for us, one, every single hospital cares about patient satisfaction. It is one of the top five things they're measured on. Period, end of story. Quality is one. Patient satisfaction is another. There's three to five key results that every hospital is going to have. 100% paid. Because they don't have satisfied patients,
they're not coming back.
No. So if you could do a little research, and they may or may not have it on their website, but even if they didn't, you just talk about this, it helps, this will help your patient satisfaction, you tie it to one of their key results. Yeah. Yes, it matters.
Another
jargon. Yep. I'm sorry, I might back over here. Yes, Yvonne.
Is there,
this is Yvonne Mastromano again from Virginia Voice. Is there any value to carefully compare what success you're having at other hospitals? Because we have a lot in our area.
1,000%. Hospitals are extremely competitive. And I can tell you that, and they play nice in the sandbox when it comes to, I mean, honestly, the good of the community, but make no mistake, I'll just say this, I used to run the United Way here, and we had our United Way call a few weeks ago with the president, the two volunteers, and my CEO asked, what does Unity Point raise? He asked, what does Unity Point raise? That happens a lot in our hallways. Unity Point asks the same, what does Mercy One do? What does Mercy One do? They ask, they want to know, yes. And if one is doing better than the other, yes. That's a big one.
We good?
Well, it's been a pleasure. Welcome to Des Moines. I came here in 2004, and it was nothing like it is today. It's a gorgeous day. We have so much to offer. I hope you have a good evening, a good rest of your afternoon, and welcome here and enjoy your next few days, couple of days, I guess.